Well, thank you so much for joining me again today. This is Neighbors in Need, and I am Sandy Waters. And dear friend Jennifer Farringer is on with us again from the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, also known as NCADD. Thank you so much for being here again.
Good morning, Sandy. Always a pleasure to be here.
Okay, let's get the website out there because I know you guys are really excited about the revamped website.
Yes, totally revamped and very accessible now. Very visual, easy to find the directories and the information resources that folks are always looking for.
And that is NCADD-RA.org. There are a lot of things that you guys focus on and create awareness around. So any issue that you have, go to the website. We encourage you to do so. But today, for the next 15 minutes, we're going to talk about gambling. And you might think of, you know, a stereotype in your mind of, oh, that's not my problem. That's nobody I know's problem because it's not obvious.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But that's the real issue with gambling, right? It's
right.
Not always obvious.
It's the silent addiction. There's no smells. There's no track marks. There's no obvious signs and symptoms.
So let's learn more about this. Gambling. Give me some statistics around it. Who does it include, the percentages? And
Sure. There's about a good third of the population that don't even gamble at all, period. And then there's a relatively small part of the population, but still significant in terms of impact, about 10% of the population who account for anywhere from 65 to 75% of the wagers. So when you think about that, small percentage gambling, an enormous amount of money, time, resources.
But don't think it's a problem at that point.
Right. And certainly, yeah, they're unaware, denial, as with so many other addictions, and typically have depleted resources to continue their gambling at that point.
Now, when you talk about depleting resources and in the cause and effect of this, what are some costs to society, we could say?
So with the family, you know, so too often I hear from spouses or family members that say, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I was totally unaware until I went to the bank account and found it empty. Until my son, daughter was ready to go to college, we tried to access the 529. It was gone until we found the house was mortgaged and remortgaged. But other costs are things like divorce when it gets to the point of absolute frustration and you've tanked all our resources, separation, even child abuse and neglect, you know, from the sheer frustration and anger that this causes in the family once that secret is out. So that's some of the costs to
in
the family.
Finances alone.
Yeah.
It's stressful. When
it's
you don't feel
stressful.
Like you have control of your finances, there's a lot of weight on your shoulders, which does turn you down this path of anger and frustration and lack of patience because, right? That's
right.
A heavy weight.
It's huge. And I think that's why this is not only a silent addiction, but one out of five either contemplate or get further than that in terms of suicide because they see no other way. They've gotten themselves and their families in such a predicament that they see no way out.
Do you find that it's hard for those who have a problem to even realize they do and seek the attention that they need, the treatment?
With many addictions, it's very often taking that first step, recognizing that, you know what, this is consuming my life, and maybe I need to take a look at that. So, it's hard to take that first step, but it's so important. And there's so many ways to explore from the reaching out to the 12 steps, the Gamblers Anonymous group, speaking with others that have been in the same situation, reaching out to now increasing resources in our community. We have several treatment providers now that have waivers, so someone can go into an addiction treatment site, two actually in our area, and that's all on our website. And that can be their primary entry into that addiction site, when before you had to have a co-occurring issue with alcohol or other drugs to get treatment for your gambling.
Oh.
And now that's not the case.
Oh, that's good to know. Okay. Now there's, and I recall you mentioning there are different types of gamblers.
There are. So there's the social gambler, and that's the one that's really the majority of the population. That would be the person that would say, well, let's go to the casino for dinner to see a show, and yeah, maybe we'll gamble, and we have a roll of quarters. You know, so they're setting a time, setting a limit. It's not the expectation that that's what they're going for. That's okay. Just a tiny piece. So setting the limits is the big deal.
That is the okay.
That's okay. That's okay because you've set that limit. It's not going to overtake your resources, your attention. It's not going to jeopardize relationships, work, etc. And then you've got the problem gambler, and that is the person where more and more time now is being devoted to gambling. Mm. So, yeah, you're going around along with friends to see a show, but you know what? You're really there to gamble more and more, more time, more resources. And when you get to the point of having a gambling disorder, at this point, you've got an uncontrollable preoccupation to gamble that extends beyond your visit to the casino. That includes internet gambling, sports gambling, there's so many opportunities in the community to gamble, and it takes over your life.
And is it an evolution? Do the problem gambler, did they start as the social gambler, and then once they won a couple times, then it kind of enticed them to?
That's a good point. So when you talk to folks in Gamblers Anonymous, we ask them, what was the worst thing? What was the thing that really sealed the deal, so to speak, for you? And that was that early big win. Mm-hmm. They said that was the worst thing that could have happened to me. Does that mean that anyone that experiences a big win will go down that path? No, not necessarily. But that's not a good thing to have happen. So it gives you that illusion that, oh, well, you know, that'll be the norm, not the singular issue.
Yeah.
So they're always kind of chasing that next big win. And they become less aware of the amount of money that they're losing and more focused on the limited, more and more infrequent times they're winning.
That must be a euphoric feeling, though, yeah. When you do win.
Absolutely.
You want to go back to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. But too, for the person with the problem gambling disorder, they say after a while, it's not even focusing on the win. That becomes insignificant. The adrenaline rush is actually the play. The play, they become so obsessed with the action of gambling or the actual gambling than actually getting the win. So the win may have kind of taken them down that road, but it's the thrill of the gambling that keeps them going.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought it was always the win.
Yeah.
Or, you know, trying to achieve that again.
Yeah. I mean, they're trying to chase because they're trying to make up losses that become larger and larger and larger. But it's the thrill and the adrenaline rush of the gambling activity.
You know what I always find alarming? And we're on with Jennifer Farringer from NCADD, National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, NCADD-RA.org, for all the information that we're talking about today and even more so. But I remember you saying in the past how youth gambling, it's alarming and surprising how we start our kids young, but not even really realizing it.
Right, right. So we say to parents, you know, when you think about birthday gifts, Christmas gifts, Hanukkah gifts, whatever, do you give a lottery ticket? Do you give a scratch off? How many do that without even thinking about it? And what kind of message does it say to a young person?
Yeah.
You know, does that really start them down that road? It could very well be, because we're seeing in terms of age of onset, when kids first start gambling, it's very much like age of onset with, for example, drinking, or age of onset with marijuana or tobacco or e-cig use. There's a lot of similarity. And there's also a big connection with kids kind of reproducing the behavior they see at home. So if they see mom or dad coping with the stressors of life with problem gambling, they're quite likely or more likely to go down that road as well and see it as a release.
How about those flipping comments that we say, like, oh, I want to win the lottery. Yeah. Oh, the bills are due today. Let's go play the lottery. We've all said it.
We all have. And when you look at the likelihood of that, you know, the little guy, the little dollar in the dream guy, he doesn't tell you about the likelihood of you actually winning the lottery. You're just focused on the ever-increasing millions of dollars. So sure, it's only natural that somebody would.
Should we try to eliminate that from our vocabulary, or do we have a conversation around it?
Have a conversation, certainly, and understand the prevalence. And I don't know that the lottery is such a big player in terms of getting people there. You know, I think more of the prevalence of scratch-offs. When you look at the scratch-offs in the little stores now, you see more and more. There's so many opportunities.
Yeah.
For young people, the lead-in seems to be the computer, or it's right on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not even initially gambling on their phone. They're gaming on their phone. And once they become gaming on the phone, those are kind of teach sites. And once they become successful, up will pop in the right-hand corner. Now, if you had been doing this for money, just think how much you would have won. And they'll let you know this is how much you would have won.
Yeah.
So if you want to proceed and now gain some money, go get a credit card. And it's a young person. Where are they getting the credit card? Typically mom or dad's credit card, inputting it, and they're off to the races.
That's a very interesting point. What is, because we always thought gambling was just at the casino, but it's so much more
than
that.
So much more than that. And with the advent of the internet and again, the iPhone and the ease, the folks that are in recovery from gambling will talk about pajama gambling. And when I first had that, what is pajama gambling? And that's the ease of gambling. You don't even have to walk out your door. You just turn on your laptop, pick up your iPhone, and you can gamble right there.
There's probably no hard studies or evidence yet, the effects of that specifically.
There is in Canada. So Canada is doing much more research in terms of youth gambling and the influence of gaming and gambling on the internet.
Mm.
And they're showing a larger increase due to that and due to these test sites, these gaming sites, which then become gambling sites for young people. So I think we have to think about those. But you also think about, you know, in schools or community groups, youth groups, what kind of messages do we say when we include in a school day raffle or any other gambling activity? We need to think about our language and think about what we're promoting.
Yeah.
And instead think about what could be a proactive gambling policy for this youth group or for this event that the school is sponsoring, rather than going down and using the language of gambling. How about let's have a gambling-free event and be very loud and clear about that. And there's opportunity to engage in that if there's community leaders that are interested.
So what do we do now if we know that we could be either ourselves going down the wrong path, or we see now that we've listened to you and we go, oh, yeah, okay, now there are warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
Now what do we do?
Mm-hmm. So understand the warning signs big time. Understand when you start to expend more and more of your resources, more and more of your time, when you have a sense of depression, and individuals may not realize it themselves, but if they hear that reflected around them, when you start to see in the family selling possessions in order to gamble, and what to do, the important thing is to set a limit. Set a limit of time, set a limit of resources, and don't gamble to cope. Don't gamble because you're having a bad day. You know, once you start to go down that road and use it as a coping mechanism, it could easily go and become an addiction. And don't borrow to gamble. So if you've been the person that set the limit, okay, I'm only going to gamble $10 in this first hour, and that's it, then I'm done. Well, when you're done with that, don't go to your friend and say, you know, I'm doing really well. Could I borrow another $20? You know, you want to truly set a limit and stick to that limit, and don't gamble don't borrow to be able to keep on gambling.
And we can always reach out to you guys, right?
Absolutely. So we do prevention education, but we can help with resources. And there are private practitioners that work with folks with problem gambling. There are two treatment providers with waivers. All of this information is on our website. And there is a Finger Lakes Problem Gambling Resource Center now that can also help with resources as well. And all that information is on our website.
Is on the website.
Yeah.
The revamped website. Oh my gosh. Okay, so there is so much information here. And I encourage you to go to the website, NCADD-RA, National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. Jennifer Farringer, thank you so much again for your time.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure, Sandy. Thank you.